Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
Does this sound familiar? You find a recipe that you want to try, get the main ingredients together, and start to prepare it only to discover that you'd forgotten to think about whether you had dried thyme or soy sauce. And guess what? You realize that you don't. Whether you're a seasoned cook or an occasional one, it can be hard to know what you should have always on hand. Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, is here to help, and I'm pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well. And if anyone in our audience has a question or would like to share some must-have ingredients, give us a call at 212-433-9692. Or you can write us on our show page or find us on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Well, Jack, is the must-have list for a person who cooks at home regularly different from the one who just cooks occasionally?
Not really. I think it's more making sure you have the right ingredients and that you have stored them in the right place in your kitchen. And you may be surprised where the right place is for some of these ingredients.
So what do you mean? The right place might be the refrigerator when we think that they can be just stuck in a cupboard?
Let's start out with the freezer. The freezer, especially for the occasional cook, is going to give you a much longer shelf life. And I think a lot of people don't think about putting certain ingredients in the freezer, and it's really the best place for them. Everything from butter to nuts to stock to tomato paste to canned chipotle chilies, they all can last for months and months in the freezer, which, of course, if you're going to be cooking sort of irregularly, is the best place to be keeping them.
But what about those spices? You bought a spice because a recipe called for it, and then you don't use it again for another 6 months. And at a certain point, you realize you spent $5-6 to buy that fresh nutmeg, and now you're going to throw it out.
Whole spices can go, like nuts, in the freezer, and they should stay in the freezer for at least a year, and they'll be fine. You're probably going to toast and grind those whole spices. I'm talking about cumin seed or if you've got cinnamon stick. Now, if you're buying ground spices, you've got about 12 months. They stay in the pantry. They're not really going to do any better in the freezer. And, it's not that they go bad, but they end up losing some of their oomph. And anytime you have any doubt, take a whiff, or rub some between your fingers. And this applies to everything from dried oregano to ground cinnamon. And if you're not getting much aroma, then it's not going to hurt your food, but it's certainly not going to help your food by throwing in something that's pretty tasteless.
I don't use baking supplies like baking powder, baking soda, powdered sugar, cornstarch all that much, but I need to have them if I'm going to bake at all. Do they lose their potency over time?
Baking powder and baking soda have a shelf life of about 6 to 12 months. And, what will happen is they will gradually lose some of their leavening power. And once you really get past 12 months, they get to the point where you may get muffins or cakes that are not rising properly. And, of course, you don't want to go through all the time and energy and money of making a baked good and then not have it rise properly. So, with the baking powder and the baking soda, same thing even with the dried spices, is if you get those little stick-on dots, and throw that on the package with the date that you buy it, because, of course, you don't remember how old is that baking powder that's been sitting in my cupboard. Then it'll at least remind you, okay, I bought this, back in November, and I've got 6 more months to use it up.
There are some basics I think almost everyone has, like milk and eggs. Any tip on those?
The worst place to put eggs is that plastic egg container that comes in the door in your refrigerator. The door of your refrigerator is about 40 or 45 degrees, while the sort of center back part of your refrigerator is more like 35. And the eggs do better. They will last longer in the cooler temperature. They also like to be in that carton. They like a very humid environment. It keeps them from drying out. And if you take them out of the carton and put them in that little plastic egg tray, you're not only probably putting them someplace warm, but you're letting them dry out. So just keep them in the cartons that they have, and they will stay nice and fresh.
And then milk. Some people prefer whole 2% skim. Some people, when you buy organic milk, it's likely to be ultra-pasteurized. Does any of that matter once you've opened it?
It doesn't really matter once you've opened it. And so, you know, milk is one of those things. Buy as much as you think you are going to use. You probably have a couple days past the sell-by date until you're going to notice anything. You know, that date that's on there is not an expiration date. It's a sell-by date. And so, you know, it can be a week if you've gotten the milk home quickly and not let it warm up too much and then keep it in the refrigerator past the sell-by date, that will be fine. And you really can't freeze milk, unfortunately. You can buy powdered milk for baking. So if you're somebody who doesn't drink much milk but you do like to bake, you can buy powdered eggs and powdered milk, and they can be pretty good stand-ins if you're not going to keep those ingredients in the refrigerator regularly.
You can't freeze eggs, can you?
No freezing of eggs. If you have some extra egg whites, you know, say you're making creme brulee and you feel like you don't want to throw out the 12 whites because creme brulee is just using the yolks, you can try to freeze the whites and then use them for meringue cookies or something like that. They'll freeze okay for something like that.
What produce should you always have on hand? Should you always pick up a lemon and a lime when you're at the supermarket?
I was just going to say, I think lemon is absolutely essential. Lime is pretty much close to essential. They're going to last a pretty long time in the crisper drawer. I think the most important things are always to have onions and garlic on hand. I mean, if you think about all the great cuisines of the world, one of the things that unifies them is their use of onions and garlic. And making sure that you've always got fresh garlic and fresh onions on hand is going to be a start for so many different recipes, whether you're making a pan sauce, a stew, a pasta sauce. You're going to want those ingredients.
And they last a little longer than potatoes and tomatoes and some of the other things that I would consider essentials.
Yes, if you keep them cool, not cold, but cool. So, you know, put them in a pantry would be great, and in the dark. If you put them in the window, they're much more likely to sprout. And so if you've got onions or garlic, putting them someplace where they can breathe, not in a closed container, and tuck that into a relatively cool pantry rather than, you know, close to the stove where it's hot, or in a window, they're going to last much longer.
And I'd imagine if you're lucky enough to have a basement, that's a good place to put them as well.
That is the perfect place to put them.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or find us on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. And we ask listeners on Facebook and Twitter what ingredient they couldn't live without. And Kristen on Facebook told us she couldn't live without garlic. Liz said it was onions. She wondered how long you can keep those root vegetables around. Well, you kind of answered that. But what about onions? Do we need to have yellow, white, and red onions on hand at all times?
Your basic yellow onion is good for 98% of the recipes you're going to want to make. Red onions are really great if you want them raw in a salsa, for instance. The yellow onions can be a little harsh in that case. But I think for everyday cooking, what to stock in your pantry, you want to pick up one of those mesh bags of yellow onions and always have a couple of onions at the very least somewhere in your kitchen.
And you shouldn't put them in the bottom of your refrigerator?
You can. They're going to get softer a little quicker. It's not like they're going to go bad quickly, but they will last longer in a cool pantry than in the refrigerator, and you are shortening their shelf life by putting them in the crisper drawer.
Although sometimes you only use a half an onion, so you don't want to leave it out, do you?
No, once you've peeled the onion, it does need to go into the refrigerator, and you're going to want to wrap it tightly in plastic. Its flavor is going to get more pungent once you've sort of started slicing into it. So just note that it's not going to last for very long, maybe a day for leftover onion. After that, it gets very, very strong.
Many recipes call for using a stock, usually chicken stock. Do you consider that an essential ingredient?
Yes. Of course, if you're going to make homemade, you can divide it up into small units, either putting it in a muffin tin and freezing it and then popping those out so you've got sort of half-cup increments, or putting it in some, you know, small Tupperwares and freezing it. Most people are using packaged stock. And, you know, the two options are to get one of those quart packages that you, once you open it, needs to go into the refrigerator and will last 2 weeks. In the test kitchen, we've actually had good luck with some of the bases. There are these thick pastes that you reconstitute. A brand that we like, one of them is called Better Than Bouillon. And that paste is a jar that will last in your refrigerator for 18 months. And then you just take a teaspoon out or however much you need paste on the label and reconstitute it with some hot water. And, you know, it's not a substitute necessarily for homemade, and you wouldn't have any trouble telling the difference. But it's pretty handy, and you can buy a jar, and it will last a very long time and keep in your refrigerator a long time.
Although, isn't making homemade really pretty easy approach, and it takes care of that onion that you cut in half and all of those leaves on the celery that you bought and the tips of garlic that you're going to throw out normally. You can put all of those things in a stock along with the bones from the chicken dinner you had the other day.
Yes, yeah, stock is the ultimate use for all those leftovers you don't know what to do with.
Well, why do you think people don't make it more often? It smells great in the kitchen, and it's pretty easy to do. Just a lot of water and throw stuff in and then cook it for a while.
Because the rewards are not immediate. It is for the people who are organized and planning are making stock. But for a lot of people who are, you know, trying to decide at 6:30 what to make for dinner, making stock is pretty low down on their list, I think. And, you know, it's a great weekend activity to make some stock and put it in the freezer. And, you know, you've got a great dinner, whether you're going to be using it with some Parmesan, which is another, I think, essential to keep in your refrigerator. You've got a wedge of Parmesan. You've got some stock, and you've got arborio rice. You've got risotto, and you're good to go, and you've got a simple dinner.
Let's take a quick call from Tom. Hi, you're Tom from Massapequa. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. One of my questions is, I've heard about Vidalia onions, but I don't really know the difference in Vidalia to other onions and their attributes. Can you help me with that?
Sure. Vidalia onions are in a group of onions called sweet onions. You can see Maui onions, Walla Walla onions. And we don't actually recommend cooking with them. They are good for uses where you're going to be using the onions raw. So let's say you like onion on a burger. They're less pungent than a yellow, a white, or red onion, and they're great in that case. But if you were to make onion soup with Vidalia onions, it's just so sweet that the flavors taste off. Same thing with a stew or a stock. You're better off using a yellow onion or a white onion and save the Vidalias for potato salads or slicing and putting on top of a burger.
My guest is Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org. Find us on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We'll be back with more calls, more questions right after this. We are back with Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, and we're talking about the essential things that you would need in any kitchen if you want to cook even just occasionally. Our number, 212-433-9692. You can reach us on our show page at WNYC.org, on Facebook, or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And let's go to Emily from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. Hi. Really, really good olive oil is indispensable.
Would you agree, Jack? Olive oil? Others have said butter is on their must-have list. Do you have a preference for what kind of olive oil you keep in the kitchen?
I can't imagine cooking without olive oil. Can't believe I left that off my list. It's really, frankly, something I use a lot more than butter. The top-rated oil that we like at America's Test Kitchen is Spanish oil, Columella, C-O-L-U-M-E-L-A. It's a sort of moderately priced. It's not a cheap oil, but it's not one of the super expensive oils either. And it's just got a great flavor to it.
Is it extra virgin?
Of course, it's extra virgin, yes.
Well, can't you cook with the stuff that isn't extra virgin?
You may as well be using vegetable oil. I mean, a lot of the non-extra virgin oils have very little flavor to them, and they are much more expensive than the other oils that you can be cooking with. And I'm not really sure that there's much benefit to them, but the extra virgin oils, you know, for salads, for drizzling over steamed or boiled vegetables, for roasted vegetables, for drizzling on a piece of fish, you know, they can take something that's pretty good and make it amazing.
What about butter? Do you prefer only unsalted butter, or is there a reason to keep salted butter on hand as well?
If you love butter on toast, there's nothing like great salted butter spread on a great piece of toast. But for cooking, the unsalted butter is better. And the problem is each company adds a different amount of salt. And so you may end up over-salting a recipe if you use salted butter and it was developed with unsalted butter. And so we use unsalted butter, as do most food magazines, newspapers, when they develop all their recipes. And you can really ruin some recipes, especially baked goods, if you use salted butter. I mean, a buttercream frosting made with salted butter is not going to be very good.
Although we're seeing salt in more and more things these days, I want to talk about salt in a moment, but I thought that I would get Dawn from Newark on the line. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, gentlemen. I just wanted to know what your recommendation is for vinegar, how long you can keep it, red wine vinegar or apple cider vinegar. How long does it shelf life?
Sure. Vinegars are great because they will last pretty much forever, as long as you don't get a bloom of what they call the mother, which you can even deal with that by straining that out. Sometimes you get the bacteria coagulating, you know, the turn to the wine into vinegar. If you keep them away from sunlight, they're going to last longer, but really you've got years to use that vinegar.
And listeners have written in about other condiments. Lynn on Facebook told us she couldn't live without hot sauce. Others said Worcestershire sauce, ketchup, mustard, A1 sauce. What about mustard? Can you just use any mustard in a recipe or that calls for mustard?
You can. I mean, you'll notice differences. I mean, I think Dijon is the sort of most versatile. I personally like a mustard that has a kick to it, and so obviously Dijon has a kick to it. One of the interesting things about mustard is that it loses that kick over time, and that can happen even when it's not opened. And so people don't think of looking at expiration dates when they are shopping for mustard or sell-by dates, and the better brands will have that on them. Look for those, because about 18 months after they put that mustard in the jar, if you go to open it, it's going to have a lot less oomph than in that first 18 months after it's been processed and put in the jar.
Alex from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a food safety or food and bacteria question. When we have a lot of meat, raw meat that we've defrosted and we don't use at all, I've often refrozen the portion that we don't use. A lot of people say this is dangerous and leads to increased bacteria, but I've never had a problem recooking that refrozen meat. Do you have any thoughts to offer on that?
The issue is really about the texture and flavor, not the safety, and that's assuming that you've defrosted the meat in a safe way. And by that, I mean it's been in the refrigerator the entire time that you've defrosted it. Because by keeping it in the refrigerator, you're keeping bacterial growth at bay. And let's say then, you know, you defrosted it, and then the following day you decide to put it back in the freezer. The problem is you get a lot more moisture loss. And so we found, like, for instance, with ground beef that we had defrosted and then refrozen and cooked, it lost about 15% of its moisture by being refrozen. And so you get a burger that's a lot drier than if you had simply used fresh or once frozen beef. Same thing with steaks. That the freezing can be a little hard on meat, and each time you do that, you lose some of the texture and some of the moisture, and by doing it twice, you double that problem.
Now, what about salts and peppers? Should we keep iodized salt, fine ground sea salt, and large grain sea salt all in our house? Do we need to have black and white pepper and green pepper and red pepper?
I think the pepper's pretty easy. For the most part, black pepper does almost everything you need. White pepper can be good for aesthetic reasons in something like, you know, a vichyssoise, where you don't want the flecks of black, although that doesn't really bother me. There are some recipes where that sort of citrusy note in the white pepper are nice, but I use black pepper 99 times out of 100. In terms of salt, I really think you need at least two salts. I like to have a finishing salt. I use Malden, which has got those big crystals. And by finishing salt is something that you use at the table. And that is really the only place to use an expensive salt like that, where you can get the crunch and sort of the flavor. If you are cooking pasta, you should be using the cheapest salt you can buy, and you should be using either kosher salt or table salt. To use fine sea salt in soups, sauces, pasta pots, is just kind of crazy, because you're not going to taste a difference. The big difference is the texture, and of course, once it dissolves, there is no textural difference.
Well, since you mentioned pasta, are there certain kinds of dried pasta that you should have waiting in your cupboard?
I think the most useful thing is to have at least, think about it, one long strand and one short tube. And probably linguine and penne are about the most useful. You can certainly use spaghetti instead of linguine and instead of the penne if you really like ziti or rigatoni. But in general, I think, you know, there's sauces that do really well coating the long strands, especially smooth sauces, pesto, for instance, a cream sauce. And then those chunky sauces that do well with the tubular pastas. And so I usually have a couple of pounds of each sitting somewhere in my pantry, and know that there's always some penne or ziti and always some linguine or spaghetti sitting in the pantry.
And rice, which comes in different lengths, used in different cuisines. Is there one that you must have?
For most American cooks, probably long grain white rice is the most useful. Although personally, I can't imagine not having arborio rice, because I love risotto, and I like brown rice as well, and I like long grain brown rice is what I keep on hand. If you do a lot of Asian cooking, you might be more interested in the short or medium grains, but for sort of most recipes, those long grain rices are probably the most versatile.
And then flour is it's a pretty basic ingredient. Should we just have an all-purpose flour, or should we also invest in baking flour, whole wheat, bread flour? There are a whole bunch of other specialty flours in my supermarket.
I would stick with the all-purpose unless you're a big baker. You can get cake flour, you can get bread flour, but the reality is, even for a lot of baked goods, cookies, muffins, you're going to be using all-purpose flour. We prefer the unbleached to the bleached flours. They have a slightly better flavor. That bleaching process where they add some chemicals gives it a bit of an off flavor, so get the unbleached all-purpose. And if you're going to buy whole grain flours, so this is everything from whole wheat flour to cornmeal, that whole grain means it's got the natural oils from the germs, and it can go rancid fairly quickly. So if you're not using them up in a couple of months, keep them in the freezer. All whole grains and whole grain flours will do better in the freezer than the pantry.
Jack, my big problem is that we're sticking a lot of stuff in my small freezer. although one listener, in fact, a couple of listeners have asked why you say we can't freeze milk, and they know people who do it, and it seems to work for them. What happens when you freeze milk?
You can get some separation of the milk, and it depends what you're planning on doing with it. You know, if you're going to throw a half a cup in a cake recipe, it probably will be fine. But if you're going to try to make, you know, a bechamel, a milk-based sauce from milk that's been frozen, you're going to have some textural problems there.
John from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love the show.
What's your question?
I have a quick question. I never really thought about it until I was listening to your guest. My wife, normally we don't eat that much to begin with, so we just have toast and butter. But she doesn't have the patience to put it back in the fridge so it can thaw out and apply it again. And she just leaves it out for the whole day and days on end. I was wondering, is that okay? I always just put it back in the fridge.
It is going to stay fresher longer in the fridge than it is out on the counter. I do know people who keep butter out, and I grew up in a house where the butter was always in the fridge. You're going to get some off notes more quickly if it's out on the counter.
Although you could, people tell me, mostly people who grew up in farms, that they keep it out for a day, and that's fine, and it's a lot easier to put on bread, but you don't want to keep it out more than a day.
Yes, I totally agree.
What about olive oil? A number of listeners have asked about olive oil, because I was told by Luigi DiPaolo at one of our great Italian food stores here that it starts deteriorating the minute you open the bottle. So you got to use it up pretty quickly.
That's totally true, and within 12 months, it's really gone downhill. Most every brand will have a harvest date on them, and the harvest date, depending on where you are, is somewhere between October and maybe December or January, and sometimes it'll just have a year on it. But if you're, you know, we're just now starting to see the 2012 vintage oils showing up in the market. And so if you see 2012 and it doesn't have a month, you can assume that it's from the fall of 2012 because that's when the harvest is. You really want to make sure you're replacing the oil every year and that you don't, at this point, if you've got any 2011 oils, use them up because they're past their expiration date, so to speak.
And others, other listeners want to know about Worcestershire sauce, soy sauce, A1 sauce. Do they all have short shelf lives?
As long as you keep them in the fridge, and that includes the soy sauce. A lot of people keep soy sauce in the pantry, and once it's opened, it's really going to stay much fresher and stay for at least a year in the fridge. The rest of those, you know, the A1 and the Worcestershire, they're really fine for at least a year in the fridge, if not longer, because they've got a lot of acidity in them, and they're going to be fine.
Just one other thing. What about canned goods? In the past, people relied a lot on canned goods. Are there certain must-haves?
Canned tomatoes are probably the number one thing to have, and to have them in multiple formats, you know, recipes that call for diced tomatoes, crushed tomatoes, whole tomatoes. I've got a good stock of canned tomatoes at all times in my pantry.
You don't keep tuna fish or soup in your pantry?
I'm not a big tuna fish person, although if you like tuna fish, canned tuna is the way to go. And I make my own soup.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We've been talking about the must-haves in every kitchen with Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen. Thank you all who've called in. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of your calls, but we're probably going to address these issues again sometime in the near future, and I hope we can talk with you again, Jack, about them.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, Leonard.